The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes past nine, Wednesday, the 20th of September. How are you all keeping? Are you well? Bit of a change in the weather, isn't there? Chilly last night. Liked it though. I slept better, as I was saying to Lee there. I think I sleep better when it's not quite as warm, but anyway. Right, we've a busy show lined up for you. We've got live music for you as well. Very exciting in the second hour of that and so much more besides. We want you involved in the conversations, starting the conversations. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts. You can send your voice notes to WhatsApp as well on that number, 086 60 25,000. Feel free to do so. If you want to give us a call, it's 07491 25,000, and we're a show for the Northwest as well. So if you're listening in Derry and Tyrone, you know how you dial in, don't you? 00353 86 60 25,000. That's your WhatsApps and texts. And then the phone number, it's the same process. Drop the O. And at 00353. Email comments at Highland Radio from anywhere where you're listening. And don't forget, you can watch the show live on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, on your big smart TV, your Fire Stick, your mobile devices. And we're on Facebook as well, Highland Hub and Highland Radio News and Sport. Let's have a look at the newspapers. A Better Life for Finn Valley Men's, the front of the Finn Valley Voice. What would help Finn Valley men over 50 to live a better life? A game of two halves, an evening for men over 50, aims to investigate that question. Organised by Paddy Hannigan with support from Sally Mooney and Claire O'Kane, both from the Finn Valley Family Resource Centre, and Bill Vaughan, Mental Health Ireland. The evening takes place on Friday the 6th of October at the Finn Valley Centre at Stranola. More on that and what it's all about in that paper today. The Donegal Post asks, where has the €100,000 funding for Donegal Town footpath out to Craft Village gone? Anyone familiar with that area would know, out past the school, out towards Abbott. The Craft Village is in there and to your left. A lot of people walk on that, but it's not terribly safe. Funding said to be worth €100,000, which was allocated for the completion of a walkway from Donegal Town out towards the local Craft Village, came up for robust discussion at the September meeting of the Donegal Municipal District when it was learned that there was uncertainty over where the money is now after the plan did not come to fruition. The funding of €100,000 from the Department of Rural and Community Development was to be in addition to the council's own funding of €25,000. And a big residential area there now out past the Craft Village, which would probably use it more so. And that money, where is the question. On to the Inish Times now, and Guardian Buncrana are appealing for information after two assaults in the town at the weekend. Two men received treatment at Letterkenny University Hospital following two separate incidents in the town on Sunday. The first assault took place at West End at around 2:35 a.m. on Sunday, when Gardaí believe a man was assaulted by another male. The injured man was taken to hospital. The second assault took place in the Park Lane area of the town shortly after 7:40 p.m. So still somewhat bright. This on Sunday, when Gardaí believe a man was assaulted by a group of youths. He also ended up in hospital, and both of those instances were the subjects of appeals on Highland Radio's Community Garda information yesterday, if you want to listen back. Letterkenny Live out this morning. Cara House Family Resource Centre entered a new era on Friday with the official opening of the new state-of-the-art complex at Pierce Road, Letterkenny. It was initially set up to establish, promote and operate a socially inclusive family resource centre to act as a focus and catalyst for community development in Letterkenny and surrounding areas. It also aims to provide support and education services for the local community. Let's turn our attentions to the Nationals now. And the Irish Independent, the government's coming out in support of cash. All public bodies are to be told they will have to continue to accept cash when consumers are paying for services. It comes after the operator of the NCT car testing service was forced into an embarrassing U-turn when it said it would stop accepting cash for bookings, tests and only take the economic payment, bank drafts or postal orders. The announcement to go cashless by NCT operator Applus last month prompted a massive backlash. Now, Finance Minister Michael McGrath has moved to prevent public bodies from blocking the use of cash to pay for goods and services. And may I say, and I'm not sure there's provision for this, would it not be good too for organisations which are heavily funded by government, i.e. the GAA, for instance? I think they get somewhere in the region of €20 to €30 million in direct funding from government. Should a provision of that or a proviso of that funding not be that they should also accept cash. If the government's truly committed to cash, I don't think that would be a terribly bad move, would it? Use that pressure, say, look, we don't mind supporting you, really important life and soul of the of our country, but if you want your 20-odd, 30-odd million euro per annum, you're going to also have to start restart accepting cash. It would be nice. But anyway, it's understood Mr. McGrath has written to ministerial colleagues asking them to ensure public bodies under the remit continue to accept cash. Now, I do know the GEA is not a public body, but as I say, you could exercise some influence or pressure there, perhaps. OK, on to the Irish Times this morning. More on this story of the experience of children having gone through operations in the hospital in Dublin. The independent review of spinal surgeries that had been carried out by a consultant in Temple Street Hospital is to be widened to cover all paediatric orthopaedics in the state. The review ordered into safety concerns arising from the consultant's work will also examine the way the spinal surgery service has been run and the long delays experienced by children needing orthopaedic operations. Minister for Health Stephen Donnelly has indicated long waiting lists to treat scoliosis and other orthopaedic conditions in children have been a source of embarrassment to successive governments and have remained high despite substantial investment. There are currently 54 children waiting for spinal surgery at Temple Street, but a total of 261 children on lists across three Children's Health Ireland sites. Now, you can imagine if the children can be insulated from this story, all well and good, but certainly their parents, caregivers, who are on that waiting list, already a very long waiting list, not knowing when their child's going to get this much-needed surgery, but then reading of poor outcomes for quite a number of children who did undergo this surgery. Some became really quite ill. One passed away. I'm not quite sure if it's a direct result of the surgery. That investigation is ongoing. But again, already a very difficult, stressful situation. And now concern over the remedy, which must be a nightmarish situation. If any of you out there got that letter or are affected by that and you want to share your story with us, please get in touch, 07491 25000. President Michael D. Higgins has warned that there is no doubt whatsoever that people will have to change their diet to help deal with climate change. This is the Irish Daily Mail. Speaking at the opening of the Ploughing Championship yesterday, President Higgins also said consumers need to recognise that farmers need a fair price for their produce and that we must put an end to the destructive practice of below-cost retail. With consumers continuing to face high prices, he said that some people have become accustomed to a cheap food policy where you have artificially reduced prices. Well, no disrespect to the president, but we are struggling here. We are at the pin of our collar and food has gone through the roof. Getting rid of any little savings that we might make, I know maybe it's the farming community that's absorbing them, but the president's seeking for an end to below-cost selling of food or artificially reduced prices doesn't sit very well with me. Maybe down the line when there's a bit more money about for the average person, but at the moment we need to be making all the savings that we can. And what he's saying effectively is as well, we probably, and he chose the Ploughing Championship to say, we probably need to be eating less meat. He didn't say it directly, but I presume that's what he's saying. While the president did not outright tell the public to eat less meat, he said, I have said that everyone's going to have to change in the same way people will be adjusting their own diets. I think you're going to see big changes in diet. I'm not going to say anything disrespectful, but I suppose we perhaps all have to play our part then. On to the Irish Daily Star. Gaelic football legend Joe Brolly has revealed he'll boycott Derry senior games as he branded Mickey Hart's appointment as a disgrace. Former All-Ireland winner Brolly also said it was the last straw for him. The ex-Sunday Game pundit's comments come after it emerged on Monday night that Hart was quitting as Louth boss. The weekend he announced that Hart was leaving to take over the back-to-back Ulster champions Derry, and he did so formally last night. Brolly initially took to social media and wrote, "What in the name of F?" And he followed that up by adding, "This is the worst thing to happen to Derry since the plantation." However, Brolly went on to expand on his view on BBC Radio Ulster's talkback. He said, "Derry GEA has been selling its soul for some time now, but to sell your soul for a Tyrone man, and I think there's a lot of anger." Brolly went on to add, "I'll not be going to any Derry senior games." Are you a Derry fan? Let us know if you are of a similar mind or not, more importantly. If you're dialing us from Derry, 00 0800 353 866 25000 to WhatsApp, or you send your voice messages to that number as well. Or maybe you think it's great. We want to hear all views. Let us know. Or if you're a Donegal, Tyrone fan, or wherever you are from and wherever you're listening, let us know what you think of that appointment. Gunbelievable is the headline in the Irish Daily Mirror. There'll soon be no armed Garda cover across most of Ireland for 4 hours every morning, it's feared. The Irish Mirror, as well as all the other papers, have learned of serious concerns among rank and file Gardaí that there'll be no armed support from 4am and 8am nearly everywhere except Dublin under the return of the controversial old roster system in November. One source said the issue will be a massive challenge, especially in border areas where incidents routinely happen in the early hours of the morning. They said it leaves a huge hole. And the bottom line is the we've had standoff situation, hostage situations, or however they might be described in the past, whereby you would have really needed a rapid response from armed support. You would hope that this doesn't end up costing lives. And this is part of a wider review, which isn't covered in the papers today, of Drew Harris's rota system, which has effectively, as much as I could see, been deemed not fit for purpose. But he says it's the only alternative to the COVID one, and that's why they have to employ it. It's the only agreed roster that's in place there. Finally, the Irish Sun. Shows and podcasts featuring Russell Brand have been taken down from the BBC and Channel 4 sites following claims of sexual assault. YouTube also blocked the 48-year-old from making €1 million a year in video advertising revenue, and he was dumped by his publicist and movie agency. Also he's got multiple companies. He shut one company down and resigned from two or three others in advance of these allegations being made. Old episodes of Big Brother's Big Mouth, The Great Stand-Up, The Cancer Bake Off and QI have been pulled years after they were first uploaded, with the BBC saying they were deemed to fall below public expectations. The broadcaster was also understood to have ensured Brand has been jettisoned from any comic relief charity fundraising. Alec Gold's still waiting for a comment from Mr. Brand to reject, as I presume he will, those allegations, because that was his position before they were made. Now, reading that the future of flights from City of Derry Airport to Liverpool has been questioned this week as the airline Loganair states they are serving the route until the new year. Loganair stepped in to take over flights to Liverpool's John Lennon Airport in May 2021 after Ryanair decided to take a step back from the route. The airline said at the time they wished to step in to connect these two important destinations to safeguard this connection. Now flights are unable to be booked online for the Derry to Liverpool route after January 5th. Sean joins us on the programme now. Sean, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for taking the call. This doesn't look good for the future of these flights. Are you surprised?
Not surprised at all. I mean, I've lived in Trabant the last 10 years, so for the first 4 or 5 years of me living here, I regularly got flights from City of Derry to Liverpool. Done it all the time. The flights were really cheap, really accessible, lots of flexibility with them. But since Loganair's come in, and I have used Loganair a couple of times, but the prices are just extortionate. So it's much cheaper to go and travel to Belfast, pay your car parking space, and use EasyJet. And it's not cheaper by half. It's sometimes cheaper by quarter or even more than that, you know.
Yeah.
All right. So not shocked. Not shocked at all.
And can you give us some idea of prices?
Yeah, well, you know, this is just roughly an obvious thing. Prices can fluctuate at weekends and stuff, you know, but you can get a return flight from Belfast in around the £70-80 mark. You know, that's kind of, if you book a couple of weeks or months in advance, as where Loganair, you're talking maybe £200, maybe even more. That plus, there might only be maybe a flight on the Friday afternoon and a flight coming back on the Monday afternoon. Mm. You know, it's not very, and then obviously a big thing would be the football. So if Liverpool are playing, obviously there's a big contingency from Derry and the surroundings to support Liverpool, the prices go up even more. And again, they wouldn't change flights because of the kickoff times. So, you know, that being said, although I'm not shocked at all. And as I say, it's a hell of a lot cheaper. It does add about an hour and a half on your trip. Of course it does. And I would much prefer to travel from Derry. But, cost of living crisis, what are you meant to do? You can't blame anyone for taking the cheaper option, can you, whenever we're in a cost of living crisis.
And I'm sure they're quite they're bound to be aware of the price difference between Derry and Belfast. It's obviously they've set a price and they've said, right, if people, this is how we can break even or make money. If people use it, they use it. If they don't, we'll discontinue it. And you wonder if the latter has happened here.
Yeah, well, obviously, but I mean, let's put it like this. So I got married there about 4 or 5 months ago. So I had a lot of family travelling from Liverpool to Strabane. And, you know, I would say 95% of people travelling over all used EasyJet from Belfast, again, because of the prices. Mm. And a couple of my aunties were on, actually took the Loganair option. Some were health conditions, so they didn't want to travel that much. And they said that the flight was practically empty when they were on the flight. Mm. So that speaks volumes, doesn't it? The fact that... But I mean, I'm not an expert in how aviation works and you know, prices and stuff, but any normal consumer is going to go for the cheaper option. Unless, you know, if it was £5 or £10 here or there, you might go, do you know what, for the sake of a couple of hours, I'll save it and I'll just get the more expensive option. But no, as I say, you're talking maybe £100, maybe £150. So it's a no-brainer, really, and I think everyone would think along those lines, you know?
Yeah, I think what you do, what I've tended to done in the past, is you put a sort of price and convenience, don't you? You go, right, well... And there's a buffer, like as you say, 10, 20, but when you start getting to 100, 150, you vote with your feet then. You just go to the cheaper option, don't you, and just absorb the extra time.
Well, you're not just talking, I'm talking, right, so I can put the diesel in my car to go up to Belfast, mm-hmm. I can book my airport parking and get my flight to Liverpool, and it's still working out maybe a quarter of the price.
Yeah.
You know, so the car parking will be about £30-40 sometimes for a couple of days, then you know, your diesel may be £25, and then, you know, the flights, maybe if you get lucky, you know, I'm saying about £80, but if you get it well in advance, you can get a flight return to Liverpool for maybe £45-50.
Yeah.
And back in the day, Ryanair from Liverpool, from City Day to Liverpool, you should get return flights for £20. Yeah. I used to book flights thinking I might not be able to make it and not really care because it was only a £20 hit.
I know exactly.
Now we're all watching every penny, aren't we?
Yeah, I know exactly. I know exactly what you're talking about. I know a few people that do that. They book them in advance, and because they're so cheap with Ryanair, if their plans change, they don't cry about it. It's a shame, really, because you know regional airports. It's significant even losing one route. You know, because it's a hit for the airport as well. I'm sure.
Well, I said it's a perfect example. So that this weekend, I'm actually going into Manchester for a concert.
Mm.
And I priced Loganair, so I did. And it was just a little bit cheaper than Liverpool, but it still worked out far better financially to go to Belfast. Yeah. And that's the trip to Manchester. So could that be, you know, on the horizon that could, you know, lose that route? And I think it's very simple. It comes down to money and people aren't stupid. You know, you can just go online and price about now, you know, everything from, you know, your phone contracts to your broadband. Everyone prices about now. You know, that's what the internet's all about. And, at the end of the day, there'll be the odd person that will just want the convenience, but most people that have, you know, got a brain in the head will go with the cheaper option. And as I say, it's only you can fly up from Strabane, Derry, those areas up to Belfast in about an hour and 15 minutes now. Mm. And EasyJet are doing 4 or 5 flights from the international a day, and they're doing, I think, there's 2 or 3 from the city airport in Belfast as well. So, you know, time slots is a big thing as well. You know, take money out of it. They're only putting maybe a couple of flights on certain times, and it may not suit you.
Yeah,
you know, this day and age and other. So there's a lot to consider. Right. And obviously with the football, when the football's on, they put the price up even more as well. Now, I'm aware all airlines do this, but yeah, that's a big thing too.
All right, who are you going to see in Manchester?
I'm going to see Shania Twain with the wife, her Christmas present. So late, but this is the thing.
That was a lovely present for her to get you.
Yeah, no, I got here.
Ah, right.
but it's a perfect example. We're getting a flight on Sunday evening really, really late. I think it's like 9:30, 10:00 at night.
Yeah.
Is it just suited us to get that late flight on the Sunday night and be there just to make sure that we're there for the concert on Monday? I'll be honest, I can't remember the flights for Loganair, but I can sure as hell tell you they wouldn't have been that much convenience. It probably would have been in the middle of the Sunday afternoon and they would probably have to come back on the Wednesday or something, you know, and... This day and age, it's all about convenience and price. And at the end of the day, I would love to, you know, kind of shop local, as they say, you know, use the City Day Airport. And I have used it on many occasions, so let's not put out there that I'm against it. And it's so handy getting through security and customs and the small airports. You kind of know you're not going to be delayed too much, et cetera, but money talks, doesn't it?
Exactly. And convenience and price, it has to be both of them in this day and age. It can't just be convenience. All right. Safe travels. Thanks, Sean, for letting us for taking the call. We do appreciate it. That's Sean there. And the unfortunate news that those flights are to see, seemingly, at least as operated by Loganair, There's no flights available to book after January 5th, 2024. A caller says, ESB profits, 670 million. Let me say that again. ESB profits this year, 676 million. Yet half, if not three quarters of the population cannot pay their electricity bill. There's something badly wrong in this country. And the explanation will go along the lines of, I'll take a break, Caroline. I'll take a break. It's okay. The explanation will be that, well, you know, Electric Ireland, or it is Electric Ireland, isn't it? Well, it's a separate company. We can't take profits out of the ESB to supplement that because that's anti-competitive. And but the Electric Ireland won't tell us how much it is. I want to make sure I've got the right company. I believe I do. But they won't tell us exactly how much they're buying electricity for in the wholesale markets because of competition. They won't tell us how much when they might be able to reduce prices because of competition. So they've got the shield of because of competition and company law and that type of stuff. But the ESB profits of 676 million. Now, they say they will invest much of that back in to the network. But at this time, we need that, don't we? We need that break on our electricity bills. OK, we'll have our next guest for you after these. Now, you're welcome back, and we welcome into studio Dr. Jen Doherty, Senior Medical Officer in Donegal. Good morning to you, Jen. Thanks so much for your time.
Hi, Greg. Thanks for having me in.
How are you keeping?
Good, good.
Good stuff. All right. Now, the focus of our conversation this morning is the Laura Brennan HPV catch-up vaccination programme. Shall we remind listeners again, we didn't talk about this too, we talked about this not too long ago, but you never know, yeah. People switch in and switch out at different times. So why is it called the Laura Brennan HPV catch-up vaccination programme?
Well, Laura Brennan was a young woman from Ennis in County Clare. And back in 2017, at the age of 25, she was diagnosed with terminal cervical cancer. She made a decision at that time that she was going to use her voice and campaign for the HPV vaccine. She had said at the time that she's the reality of an unvaccinated person. So she was of the age where the HPV vaccine wasn't available at the time when she was in school. So she decided that she was going to make parents aware of young women at the time that the vaccine was available, and decided to educate and become an advocate for the HPV vaccine. So she did a huge amount of work talking in schools and in the media. And she'd approached the HSE and the Department of Health herself to become that sort of spokesperson. Then in 2019, sadly, Laura died. And at that time, then her parents had decided that they were going to carry on her legacy. Mm-hmm. They basically kept talking about the vaccine, wanted to keep it in the public arena. And what we saw was that rates of the vaccination did increase thanks to Laura and thanks to her parents. So Laura's name was added, I suppose, in recognition of her work to the catch-up campaign that we have now. So the catch-up campaign is an opportunity for young people who didn't receive the HPV vaccine to now get it and to get it free of charge.
And vaccine uptake, it can go in peaks and troughs, can't
Absolutely.
It? I mean, like, there was some organised campaign at some point, not necessarily about this vaccine, to say, don't take the vaccine.
Yeah.
And I can't even remember who was behind it or what it was, but it died a death.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, in certain cases, you can still feel the hangover from that, you know. And I would say there's people that maybe didn't access this and they probably can't remember why they didn't.
Absolutely.
But at that time, they were being discouraged.
So absolutely. And that was one of the reasons that Laura had decided to talk about the vaccine, that rates had declined. And it was really just misinformation that was accessible at the time. So she was, as I say, very successful in getting the rates up. And we want to continue, basically, and keeping the rates for the HPV vaccine up again. So,
and before we talk about who can access and how they can access it, I mean, all of us would love to see huge medical advances, and we do see it to some extent in the treatment or the prevention of cancer in particular. This is a cancer which we do have a really effective means to prevent it, to the point whereby there's even talk of it, with the right uptake, it being eradicated.
Eradication, absolutely. So yes, as you say, this is an opportunity long term to see the rates of cervical cancer in particular really fall. Mm. And that is what we have seen in countries that introduced the vaccine before Ireland. So especially in Australia and in Sweden as well, we're seeing that the rates of cervical cancer are falling, and mm-hmm. and rates of other problems with the cervix that can lead to cervical cancer are falling as well. So it's a huge benefit.
And people are perfectly entitled to have their views on vaccinations and injections, but in this case, separate to what people might feel in other areas, this has been used for a long time. It's been incredibly heavily studied. There's an awful lot of long-term data on this vaccine and its efficacy and its safety.
Absolutely. It's been studied since 2006. It first came on the market in 2006. There's studies people involved in studies of up to 1.6 million people who have received the vaccine. So there's about 17 years of study behind this vaccine, and over 80 million doses of it have been given worldwide. So we know that this is a safe vaccine. We know that it's an effective vaccine. So the opportunity for people to have it is a really good one.
And just again, before we start getting into who, where and how do people know their vaccination status or the vaccination status of their children? I found it a little bit difficult to keep track of myself,
yeah, absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
And I know there's books and all that kind of stuff, but I am a fella. And one of the conditions of that for many of us is that you can't remember where you leave anything.
Yes.
So
yes.
How do you find out what your status is?
So if you don't have the written documentation, you can ring the immunizations office and we can check on our systems if you've received the vaccine or if your child has received the vaccine. So that's not a problem.
All right. Now, how is this vaccine delivered ordinarily? It's in how many doses and at what age?
Ordinarily, this vaccine is given to first years in school. And actually, we're starting our first year program in the next 2 weeks. So I would say to anyone who has a child in first year and they haven't received the little information pack to have a look in the school bags and see that it's there. So we give it in one dose now to kids in first year. Originally, it was given in three doses and then in two doses. But the studies have shown now that the protection from one dose is sufficient to prevent the HPV virus.
Okay, right. So now if people have missed that, there's a number of reasons they could have.
Yeah.
And it's not always, it could have been holidays, it could have been anything.
It could
have
been anything.
So if anyone's listening now and they say, right, okay, and this is for girls and boys, they say, right, we want to catch up on this. You know, who's it open to now who may have missed it in first year or for what period of time and what age categories and so on?
Sure. So it's open to women who are 24 and younger. And it's open to males who are 21 and younger. And they can have a look on the website, which is www.hpv.ie, and book an appointment online for that. So it's open to anyone who missed their HPV vaccine for any reason. It's also open to people who have become resident in Ireland who were not originally resident, who maybe didn't receive the HPV vaccine in their home country. And it's also open to refugees and people who are seeking protection. So it's open to anyone who's within that age group can receive the vaccine for free.
And what is it doing in the body and what's it preventing that then can often lead on to, or not often, I beg your pardon, that may lead on to cancer or other, there are other things it also prevents?
Yeah, sure. So the vaccine that we use now protects against 9 different types of HPV. And these are the 9 types that commonly can cause cervical cancer. So it causes, the 9 types cause more than 9 out of 10 cases of cervical cancer. So it protects against that. It also protects against, as you say, other types of cancers, which is why we are giving it to males as well.
Oral cancers,
throat cancers, cancers of the back passage, and male genital cancers and female genital cancers also. So it protects against more than just the cervical cancer. So there's added benefit there.
And is this effectively stopping something spreading between people?
So the studies show that over 90% of people in their lifetime will carry HPV. Mm. In most cases, the immune system, the body's immune system will clear that. But what happens in the case when HPV can cause cancers is that the body doesn't clear that. And these are the more invasive nasty types of a virus of HPV that can lead on to cancer. So the hope is when enough people are vaccinated that we do, as you say, eradicate or get rid of
HPV vaccine. It can be done, but obviously...
If enough people are vaccinated, absolutely.
Enough people that have to be vaccinated.
That's the long-term aim.
So all students unvaccinated, of course, second to sixth... So say, for instance, by the way, sorry, someone got one or... Do you remember how we did it as a three-vaccine programme? So someone got one or two but missed the third and now they're thinking, well, am I fully covered or what have you? What is the...
So anyone who has received one dose now is considered fully protected.
Even if it was part of a three-dose
Even at the time it was part of a three-dose, yeah.
Okay. Okay, that's just to make that clear. So the programme is expanded to include all unvaccinated students from second to sixth year in second level education, all unvaccinated males who left school second level education and are 21 years old or younger on the date of offer of vaccination. And the programme also continues for all unvaccinated females who have left second level education and are 24 years old or younger on the date of vaccination. So I always get confused about this. It's as long as you're not 22, is if you're a man,
basically,
and as long as you're not 25.
Until the day before your 22nd birthday for a boy. Exactly.
And now it is free of charge through the HSE.
It's free, and it's an expensive vaccine to get privately. So we would encourage people, and it's only run until the end of the year. So it's only running this programme until the 31st of December. So we would encourage people to have a look on www.hpv.ie and book a slot for a vaccination.
Can you take the vaccine if you have diabetes?
You can, absolutely.
Okay. Is it true that anyone with an immune deficiency should not take this vaccine?
No, actually anyone with an immune deficiency should actually get three doses of the vaccine. So there are a small number of people who require three doses rather than one dose, and that will be based on a medical history. So we would ask about the medical history when people come for their first
dose.
It's
far better to do that at the point of contact, and it gets too convoluted, the messaging, then at that point.
Absolutely.
But if someone, at the point of contact, once they engage, then it becomes clear.
And probably, you know, hugely important for someone with an immune deficiency to get the vaccine.
Right, okay. And any side effects?
The side effects mainly are, as with most vaccines, a bit of a sore arm.
Yeah,
absolutely. We see a bit of a sore arm. Some people might get a bit of redness and swelling, but usually that goes away within a day or two.
All right, so you book your appointment at hpv.ie.
Yep.
And where are the catch-up clinics?
So we are having our clinics in St Connell's Hospital and in the immunisation department. And we're actually having a clinic tomorrow, and there may be some spaces left for that. And we're having two a month for the next 3 months as well. So I can give you the dates for those if...
Yeah, go on, might as well.
So we have the 21st of December, September, that's tomorrow. We have Friday the 13th and Friday the 27th of October, Friday the 10th and the 24th of November, and Monday the 4th and the 18th of December. And we hope to get a day in the ATU as well.
Mm. Any plans for any satellite clinics, West Donegal, Inishowen, Donegal Tan?
Not at the minute. The clinics are held from 9:30 to 4:15 every day. So we would hope that would allow people to travel into Letterkenny. If people have issues and want to arrange a certain time because of public transport, then just get in touch with us.
All right, okay. Anything you want to add?
No, thanks very much
for
having me on.
No problem. Dr. Jen Doherty, Senior Medical Officer in Donegal, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, a range of comments coming in on various issues so far this morning. Greg, I'm a Tyrone fan. Mickey Hart has a great background and has many titles. What has Joe Brawley got? Only a foul mouth, they say. Tyrone man Brian McIver managed Derry without any fuss. Bloody Sunday was the worst thing to happen to Derry since plantation. This parochial reaction says more about Joe Brawley than the appointment, making it all about himself as usual. Good luck to Mickey Hart. I don't think he was actually making an actual historical comparison. I think he picked something that was a long time ago to sort of facilitate the use of a bit of humour. Whether it dropped or not, I don't know. Hi, Greg. The local library in Letterkenny no longer takes cash in their self-printing machines. They have a paper note taped over where the coins go, saying card only, even though the machine still can accept coins. And also the driving licence renewal in Letterkenny don't take cash and will only accept card. And they've done this since the pandemic started. Will they now start accepting cash? Well, if they are under government departments, they will get a diktat saying that they should, according to today's newspaper coverage. That man's 100% right. It's an awful shame. This is Sean earlier. An airport right beside us, and it's cheaper to either take a car and pay car parking in Belfast or take the air coach to Belfast than go to our local airport in Eglinton. Wild pity, they say. Do you realise how little the farmer gets for his food? You've no idea how little we earn. How insulting of you. You clearly have no idea how the life of a farmer works. I do, actually. I've really got quite a good insight to it, and we cover farming issues all of the while. But you presume... You presume that what I said was that if they continue to sell below cost food, that it's the farmers who pick up the tab. That's not what I think at all. These companies are making absolute massive profits. They're actually profit gouging due to inflation. They can still pay the farmer the correct amount of money and still discount the food so people can afford to eat. So I never said that it's farmers that should pick up the tab. The companies, the marts, the supermarket chains should pay people the money that they need to make a living, but they can chew into their own profits to keep the price of food down. This artificially low food prices. Let's not make it artificial. Let's keep it. Let them pair it off their profits. But anyway, thank you for your input. I probably should have been clearer. Greg, the game's up on mass immigration as far as the Irish people are concerned. We desperately need a halt to what is going on. The fact that a referendum would show exactly how people feel about immigration is precisely why it will never happen. People presume that a referendum would go one way or other. And it's all based off the back of a Virgin Media poll, which I can assure you is indicative, but it's not scientific. If we had a national debate on immigration, I wonder how would the poll land? Would it be a landslide? Like I believe that listener believes, there seems to be this sense that a national poll would follow that one TV station poll. I'm not really quite sure. I don't know. It's not a view. It's not a view I'm expressing on immigration. But I don't think really. You really need to dig in deep to what people think right around the country and see what their concerns are and. Before you could sort of say one way or other if it would be a landslide. I'm not saying it wouldn't be, but I also I'm not saying it would. Greg, the Ploughing Championship have pushed the digital ticket no cash entry fee from the start, but due to increasing public pressure, they decided to accept cash payments but charge €5 extra for this alternative. They deserve to be boycotted. Yeah, and there's lots of reasons. The cards very much stacked in their favour as to why it suits them. To promote people online, but it doesn't suit the punter. Antisocial behaviour in Killay going on most nights by a group of youths kicking people's doors late at night. People living on their own also annoying children playing in the park. Are you in the Killay area? Is this something that you've noticed? Are you concerned about? Let us know. 08660 25000. Hi, Greg. I just wanted to send an email regards my stay in Letterkenny University Hospital. I stayed overnight for elective surgery this week. Now, I know everything that's going on at the hospital regards bed, A&E, but I felt really had to give my experience. From the moment I arrived in the enhanced recovery unit, I was greeted by the nurses and office staff with smiles, kindness and professionalism. Then moved to theatre, recovery and onto surgical. Again, everyone I met, whether it was the nurses, surgeon, theatre staff, just someone passing you by, everyone was so lovely, kind, obliging, and I'm not exaggerating. So a big shout out to all the staff at Letterkenny University Hospital. You really are amazing and more than happy to highlight the positives. Good morning. I would like to address the crisis at Letterkenny University Hospital. I have a 92-year-old woman who's been severely ill and was in casualty a number of days ago, and she had to wait 9 hours to be seen, and she was sitting on a chair in freezing conditions throughout the night. She's currently very weak and was recommended she attend hospital for a new issue that's arising. When I called the hospital, they could not give a time frame to see how long it would take to see her. My hat's off to all medical staff, and I appreciate all their help and support to all patients. However, these kinds of conditions for both patients and medical staff is unacceptable. That is why I'm writing to Highland Radio to make an awareness about this. I hope you can help me spread the word and help this crisis indeed. And unfortunately, that 92-year-old lady, in being seen in 9 hours, was actually within targets. Can you believe that? I highlighted that in this show before, and I'll dig them out again. I think it's 12 hours. The target, the expectation is that everybody over the age of 75 in ED would be seen within 12 hours. It used to be like 6 or 7. Now it's 12 hours. That lady, 92 years of age, had a 9-hour wait, and that would be recorded as being within target. Right, Jerry Early joins us now. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing all right. You're asking, are there any TDs or MEPs not at the Ploughing Festival? I don't know. They seem all to be there.
Yeah, that's very evident by the social media content that I'm looking at the last couple of days, Greg. It's amazing that they can find the time to do that, and the fisher, those representing the fishing sector would say that it's very, very hard to get them to attend fishing expos, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, a little surprised and a little bit angry at it all, Greg, to be honest.
The farmers have the IFA, they have the ICMSA, they have multiple groups and competing groups as well. A Farmers Alliance just been launched and so on and so forth. Do you think that helps in pushing the argument for farmers Is and I mean this with absolute respect, Gerry, but is it possible that the groups representing Irish fishermen lack teeth, or at least don't have the same teeth that the farming reps seem to have, the farming groups seem to have?
No, I wouldn't agree with that, Greg.
All right, Gerry, the line's dropped there. Sorry, Gerry, the line dropped there. Just pick up from where you said you wouldn't agree with that.
No, I wouldn't agree with that. Just based on the there's very good representatives out there representing the fishing community, mm-hmm. big and small. You know, the argument could be that there's a two-tier system within that as well. But look at it's been ongoing, Greg, and this goes back to 1973, as far as I'm concerned. You know, with the advent of the EU and the lack of, I suppose, foresight by those in government.
That line. Dropped again on us there. Sorry, Gerry. We'll try it one more time. You're saying the lack of foresight.
The lack of foresight, yeah, by those in government at the time, Greg. And again, this is not a pop at the farming sector. This is a pop at the politicians who represented us back then and still represent us. There's, as far as I'm concerned, there's a real lack of cohesion. It's amazing to think, Greg, that two of the biggest sectors in this country. Farming and fishing are represented by one minister who happens to be from Donegal at this stage. And with all due respect to the minister, it's heavily led or it's heavily geared towards farming, as far as I'm concerned. Now, that's no, as I say, no slight in the farmers, but there's something far wrong with the system, Greg, as far as I'm concerned. It's rotten, like.
I mean, people speaking in the industry believe that, you know, our sacrifice for EU membership was fishing. Our sacrifice for Brexit was fishing. That every time a chip needs to be bargained, it seems to be the fishers. Do you think there's any truth to that?
It's absolutely true, Greg. And it can be seen at the moment what the best of boats being sent to decommissioning, getting cut up. It's shameful. It's very sad to see a boat getting cut up because of, I suppose, the lack of opportunities and the lack of it's quota, really. And it's amazing, Greg, to think that since the advent of the EU, there's been, and this is a conservative figure, there's been upwards of 120 billion being taken out of Irish waters, not just by EU members, but non-EU members. Mm. And again, you know, I'm part, represent the islands. I'm part of the QMAC, the quota management. And it's like, throwing a loaf here and a loaf there to fishermen who unfortunately, either no fault of their own, have been left in a situation where they're just feeding off the scraps on the table. And it's not good enough, Greg.
And in this day and age, too, there's no secrets anymore. It's not just those in the fishing industry, it's the country as a whole. You can see these floating factories going around our coast. God knows what they're sucking up out of the sea and how they're processing it and what the impact of that might be. But the problem is, Gerry, I've been talking about this long enough now, and you have lived it all your life, that I think we've already skipped a generation. And I just wonder, even if we sort of started to refocus on growing the industry again here, would we even have the interest or the personnel to do it? Maybe it's two generations that have been lost now. Do you know, people following others into the industry? It feels sometimes like a sunset industry now.
It absolutely is, Greg. And you know what's really sad about all this is that, you know, with the Brexit Adjustment Reserve that. Quite a lot of money was given to this country, upwards of $1 billion, to, I suppose, try and placate or compensate the fishermen. And a lot of that has gone towards decommissioning. So they're getting paid to decommission their boats and cut up their boats. A lot of the money then as well, Greg, went towards improvements of piers in particular. Now, you can have all the piers in the world, Greg, but if you don't have fishermen on the piers, what's the point? You know, the white elephants, as far as I'm concerned. I've been saying this consistently now for a number of years. Unless there's a real appetite to support younger fishermen into the industry, and it's just not there, Greg. To start off fishing now, it's Young people, excuse me, young people have been priced out of the market because they have to have so much money to get on the tier, to get on the ground level. It's you know, unfortunately, Greg, the horse has bolted and now we're living off the scrap.
That's it, Jerry. I kind of feel like we're speaking after the fact now. Do you know that sort of a way? I mean, in the past, having these conversations, you thought maybe there was a bit of hope or a direction we could go, but it almost feels now like a fait accompli.
Yeah, it pretty much is. And again, I suppose that doesn't help anything. And it's moan. But look, it's never too late either. You know, we can't throw in the towel. We have to find a way to encourage more young people into the industry because, you know, I don't mind saying this, Greg. I think there's been a concerted effort. It would almost look like a concerted effort to get fishermen off the water so that, you know, our waters can be pillaged by other boats and other countries. It's you know, I don't know if our listeners out there just realize the extent, Greg, of how much we've given away.
But I imagine farmers feel like they're on the same road. They're just a few kilometres behind the fishermen.
Well, maybe not. Maybe more than a few kilometres, but they're certainly headed the same way. And again, you know, if anything can be learned, Greg, from the mistake that was made with the fishermen, you know, I would support the farmers 100%. That they seem to be, you know, open to the same sanctions now that were imposed on the fishermen for many, many years. And look, that's not right either. This is not me having a pop at the farmers. This is me having a pop at the politicians who represent us at every level. You know, whether it be in Europe, local or national. And it's, you know, Greg, I'm watching politicians walking around a field in leash, you know, wearing a pair of Wellingtons, pretending they're happy. Like, they're not. You know, that's a joke as far as I'm concerned. You know, they're not down there to support the farmers. They're down there to support themselves and the boat catchers.
Right. Well, they probably would all agree otherwise, but they're not here to do so. Jerry, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. Jerry Early there.